Hello, people out there in podcast world. It's so nice to connect with you. My name is Josh Trent. This is the Wellness and Wisdom Podcast. If you're joining for the first time, this may or may not be the perfect place for you to start. If you like the title, then it is the perfect place for you to start. If you're looking for a full-length guest episode, check out our Tuesday shows with someone who has mastered multiple sides, but definitely one of our wellness pentagon, that physical, mental, emotional, spiritual, and financial way that we can nourish ourselves on planet Earth. This is the mastery we've signed up for. And there is no greater mastery, in my opinion. You tell me how you feel on our Instagram at Wellness and Wisdom. Do you feel what I feel? Are human relationships the most challenging thing for you to master? Maybe with yourself or with a man or a woman. If you have been dealing with relationship issues, which who doesn't, this is a perfect place for you to start. This is the podcast, It's All Me with Gervais Culmos, a special, special replay. And I say special, people throw around that word. This is truly a special episode, and I'll tell you why. The uniqueness of where Gervais took me as a guest was so worthy, so powerful, so beautiful that I couldn't not share it with you. I literally had to share this with you. So please take notice of everything that is shared in this podcast with Gervais Culmos. The impact of spiritual growth on you as a human, you as a father, you as a mother, you as a soul. The power of commitment to co-regulation with our intimate partner relationships. You're really going to love this clip that I share about co-regulation within intimate partnership. Also, some very deep insights on how to create safety within relationships, the difference between real safety and pseudo safety, and a rally cry for both us men and women to address our wounds and continue forward with both respect and ownership for our partners. Make sure you head over to gervaisculmos.com. That's GERVAISEKOLMOS, Gervais Culmos, and download this podcast on Apple, on Spotify, wherever you're listening is where you downloaded it. Duh, you're like, duh, Josh. Hey, I really appreciate you being here. This show doesn't happen unless we share something together, unless this conversation is worth sharing. So please, from my heart to yours, please share the podcast with somebody that is struggling in relationship with either a man or a woman or in themselves. I really believe this will be incredible for them. Now, without further ado, let's get to episode 124 on the It's All Me podcast with Gervais Culmos, co-creating safety and harmony in partnership with Josh Trent. Enjoy.
Josh, thank you so much for your time, for the three breaths we just took before we hit record, for your presence today.
Hey, you're welcome. I want to be in this space with you. It's been a long time coming. We've been marinating the soup.
I do get the sense that you are also like a deeply curious, introspective human. Would you say that is true?
Ever since I was a little kid. Yes. I mean, curiosity is my everything. If I'm not curious about something, I know it's the wrong path.
Same. Is that how you have built your business?
At times. I mean, look, there's parts of heavy lifting in business that none of us enjoy. But those parts, I build a scaffolding in my heart and mind where I know that by me doing the thing that's not sexy or not fun or doesn't, quote, feel good, it's okay because it earns me, it affords me the space and the capacity to do the things that do make me feel great and that I do love to do. So I use my curiosity as a guide or like a barometer, a compass, if you will, for me to suss out the things that are really lighting me up. And then as I move towards something that I know I'm curious about, when other things come up that I have no curiosity about, like payroll, admin, Slack communication, I don't really love these things, but I know from my own vantage point that they're necessary in order for me to still move towards the thing that's firing my curiosity. And so that's how I justify it all. Yeah.
Well, and also like a beautiful balanced answer of the masculine and the feminine, you know, and this is something that has been such a theme in my work in the last 2 years of like, oh, if it doesn't feel good, if it's not fun, if I don't like it, then, you know, I don't need to do it. And then looking at those areas, not just in business, but in my life, like I naturally am like the most femininely designed. I'm just like intuition, flow, like just let's go. Like that's what women hire me for, right? And so my work has been to balance out into the masculine form, whatever that looks like, whether it's in motherhood, but especially in business, because I'm the person that's like, oh, those details. Can somebody else, you know, look at that spreadsheet? I did have to realize through a lot of trial and error, how to create business systems and a team that worked more in balance with the masculine scaffolding, like you said. And then my curiosity gets to power the engine that is like, oh, what guests are we going to have? And what are we going to talk about? And what's the solo episode? And like that just gets to flow through however I like it. But because the scaffolding is there, you know what I mean?
I feel what you mean. And yeah. I know what you mean. I know and feel what you mean, because if I don't have structure in my relationship, I know you want to jam on relationships. So yeah, let's go. It's not always an easy topic, but it's a beautiful topic. Mm-hmm. In relationship, there must be a scaffolding, a framework of some sort. It's like, look at the laws of nature. There's a river that only flows because a channel is cut into the soil. You can't just have water flowing everywhere. It'll evaporate. You can't have only feminine energy. It'll evaporate. You can't also just be so structured that the water gets eaten up by the soil. So nature is our greatest teacher for this stuff. So yes, the answer is yes. And there's always something after the yes when it comes to these lessons of masculine, feminine, and scaffolding, or, you know, whether you want to call it water or earth, like they're always moving. It's always a moving target. You never have it down. I don't even think, you know, if you've been married for 60 years that you have it down. Mm-hmm. You always, always, always are readjusting, recapitulating, and retargeting exactly where you want to go, because you've changed and so fucking has your partner. David Data said he once, right, in his work, and I don't know if you're a fan of Data, but he was like, a man can make $1 million at work and forget the milk on the way home. And that's what he gets lectured for, is forgetting the milk. And I think that's true, because when it comes to the feminine, there is such this flow that we as men are judged by how we show up in the past 5 minutes. Forget about what the fuck you did over 5 years ago, or 5 days ago, or 5 months ago. How the feminine responds, at least in my experience, has been, how did I just show up in the past 5 minutes? It doesn't matter if I closed $1 million or if I'm doing amazing in all these aspects of life. How did I show up to you in the last 5 minutes? And that can be very intimidating for me at times as a man. And I think all of us, very confronting as man, because to quote a lot of different teachers in our space, right? Like whether it's John Wineland or Data, they say something similar, that when the masculine is presented with this frame from the feminine, he goes, but what about what else I did?
Yes. oh my gosh.
And it's like, well, no, you forgot the milk. That means unconsciously that you don't love me, that you don't care about me. And so this will be the ever folding conversation that we have today. Mm-hmm. Respect, the ultimate respect that we must have for men and women, for our differences, and honoring a sacred honoring for our differences, the celebration for how we're different, which is honestly what the media and the narrative is trying to tear down right now.
Oh my God, so good. There's so many places I want to go. First, I want to give people a little bit of context, because I realize in your bio, nobody knows that you're married with kids. And I want to just back it up for a second. And can you share, like, how long have you been married? And just do that little bit so we can get into a couple things.
So one of the things that I've done in my life is I've chosen a partner. I've chosen a woman who has her own unique wounding. And it allows me to honor and acknowledge my own unique wounding around abandonment. So I've chosen a woman that has, I don't want to say resistance to marriage. So we're technically not married.
Oh, okay. But
it's because my greatest wound is abandonment. And so I have this fear of, if I'm not married, then somehow I'll be abandoned, because there's a back door and she'll leave me. And this is where, if I allow it, my fear goes and takes me. So where we're at now, after this will be our fifth year together. And in our fifth year, there's finally been conversations of, okay, you know, we're buying a home together, we're moving forward together. What does it look like? We have two kids together. What does marriage actually feel and look like? And for her, it's something radically different. It's been a gut check moment for me. I'm not going to lie. It's been a really big gut check moment for me of like, huh, I know that I want to be married. I'm not exactly sure that she wants to be married. Otherwise, it would have come up. So what exactly does it look like for us to be in sacred union? And what does marriage look like in the future? That's actually where we are. Yeah. And the reason I say that is because I can feel it in my own heart and throat right now that this is still my work to do.
Yeah.
Is to look at my fear of abandonment, because marriage and love doesn't come from demand or threat. I'm not a religious man, but in the Bible, there's a passage that said love doesn't keep score. And that's universal wisdom, right? So if I want to be her husband, and if she wants to be my wife in the future, now granted, we already have kids, so there's a whole thing to unpack there, then there has to be a surrender to, what does she need to feel absolutely at peace and safe being a wife? And what kind of conditioning does she get to unravel that came from abusive stepfathers, father not being there, her own wounding? And what kind of conditioning do I get to get over when it comes to actually being in a sacred union where marriage and partnership doesn't keep score? These are all the honest things that I think we're both exploring right now. So I had to be real with you on your podcast. Like, we're not married. And that's the beginning of maybe our conversation here. Yes, the children came from a place of love. It's funny. Like, have you ever, I don't know how it was with your husband. When you met him, did he tell you at some point fairly quickly that he's like, hey, babe, I know that you're the mother of my children? Did he say that to you?
I don't know, because I knew very fast. And I had been in and out of like a 6-year relationship before him. And like,
yes,
a month later, he was at my mom's and I was talking to my mom like, oh, how do you know about it? Like, why did you know? Because my mom married the wrong guy. And so that's what I grew up watching. And so I think my whole life I had this idea of like, oh, it'd be so great if marriage was like really possible. But I think a part of me didn't know that it was possible for two people to be in union forever and like have that dedication to each other and for the love to be there. And she explained her experience to me when she met my dad and all the stuff. And I just immediately was like, okay, that's not me. That's not going to be me. That's not what's happening. Like, I'm having such a different experience than she had when she met my father. Not that that is like the only way it ever pans out. But for me, it was just this very clear resonance with something different than what my mom was sharing with me so generously. And a very quick, like that man, when I met him, I knew that Kevin was going to be the father of my kids.
Yeah.
I think that he probably knew it too, to be totally honest. I mean, I've never shared any of this. Oh my God, I feel a little like embarrassed. I'm like, this is so personal. And I share everything, but yeah, we knew very fast.
This is the same thing for me. I knew within 3 months. And look, I've heard from different relational coaches and psychiatrists, and actually not psychiatrists, psychologists, like real ones, you know, like Dr. Stan Tatkin, people that have merit. And they say that when the man is ready, financially, energetically, spiritually, mentally, like when we're ready as men, whatever woman is in front of us that fits the mold of whatever story we want to create, that is the one that we'll feel resonant with. And that was the case for me when I met Carrie Michelle. I had just gotten my ass kicked in an ayahuasca ceremony to the depths of my soul that actually shattered my psyche so deeply that I was kind of hobbling out of the ceremony. And in my time with ayahuasca is actually complete. That's the whole reason I'm telling you this. I saw in the ayahuasca ceremony that if I continued down the path of where I was going, that I not only would not be a father, which was my ultimate dream, but that I would never really know what love was. And so months after I did that ceremony, I connected with Carrie Michelle in Sedona. And 3 months after that, I just knew that she was the mother of my children. But I knew from a very early time, though, that this was going to be one of those twin flame relationships. And twin flame relationships are not always easy, like soulmates. By the way, you can be a soulmate with your friend. Twin flame and soulmate are definitely different. Twin flame will trigger you because they're all the dark parts of you that you don't want to see. That's a real twin flame. And they're not either better or less than. It's just some people come just in this life. You only really get one twin flame in this lifetime. And it doesn't mean you have to stay with them forever. It does mean that they are your fucking teacher. They are going to teach you more and allow you to have light shined on all the dark parts of yourself that you never even thought were there, that you didn't even know it was unconscious incompetence. You didn't even know that you didn't know they were there. That's basically what Carrie Michelle has been for me. And in many ways, I've been that for her.
Yeah. Can a twin flame be someone that's not your partner?
Oh, no. No, twin flame is only partnership.
Is only partnership.
Soulmates, you can have a friend who's a soulmate. Like, oh, I got my 3 girls, they're my soulmates, or I got my my guy that we go hunting with, and like he's a soulmate. But a soulmate is the term mate. They're just a friend. Like in the UK, they say, hey, mate.
Mate,
right? Hey, mate. A twin flame is something totally different. Twin flames are not always easy. So there's a core difference there. So twin flame, like it doesn't always have to work out either. And that's where I could bring a non-sexy viewpoint on relational dynamics. But anyways, at the core of it all, I think we're being called to this balancing, this harmonization of the water and the earth, the dark and the light, the masculine, the feminine. You could put whatever nomenclature you want on it. I just have this sense that now more than ever, men are being called to be in balance.
Yes.
Women are being called to be in balance. Where's the yin-yang in the center?
So first of all, thank you for sharing about your relationship and being so honest about the fact that it's an unfinished product, because I think this is something that really slows people down. And I can't tell you how many times in my work I'm like constantly just reassuring somebody that like, oh yeah, no, I'm unfinished too. That's not how this works. We're not doing this like I am the enlightened master and you're like, I'm on this path with you as your support and guide and helper, and it's never done. And so a lot of the women that I work with, I feel passionately about being like a gateway for women who are maybe a little bit asleep, who are a little bit maybe just so part of like the brainwashing of the modern world that they haven't had a second or felt safe enough, which is a huge piece of this, haven't felt safe to like pause and go, wait a minute, and like question, you know, because everything that I do is about questioning everything and really getting curious about like, is this real? Is that real? Who am I? Does this serve me? Is this what I want? Is there coherence between what I'm feeling on the inside and what I'm choosing? And permission is a big piece here, right? And so I think a lot of women listening to this will be really resonating this with this idea of like, yeah, I want this balance. My man feels emasculated and I feel hyper masculine, which maybe we should like even back up a step before that and explain what that could look like, how that could show up in partnership. But also they just feel like, how do you right this ship? What do I do about it? And so much of the work that I've been passionate about in the last, well, no, since forever, has been this idea of like light and dark, right? Like there are so many aspects of the human that we have just made good that we have made preferable to like the dark feminine, you know? And so like anytime, sure, for example, a woman comes to me and she feels angry, she has so much shame, so much conditioning around like, why am I angry? What's wrong with me? How could I have these emotions, right? So that's just like one simple example. And I think women feel this desire to embody what you're saying, right? Like balance out the energies in my relationship, balance out the energy within myself, balance out the energy within my family, but they just feel like they don't know what that could even look like. And so I'm curious for you, speaking obviously as a man, what are some of the ways that has happened for you guys? Obviously you have done a lot of inner work. I'm curious, like what has been your path to waking up? And I don't necessarily mean like culturally waking up, but I just mean like waking up that soul within you and like being a truer, more honest, humble, curious observer of your own patterns and your own trauma and the way that you show up in the world as a man and bringing it more into balance.
Wow, what a bomb drop. So first and foremost, it's recognizing that the way I thought spirituality was, mm-hmm, or the way that I was trained or conditioned to feel or think spirituality actually was complete bullshit. I think that the spiritual movement is, mm-hmm, good. I think it's inherently good. I think it's chaos trying to find order, and, mm-hmm, order is always good. Mm-hmm. Order is what creates the balance between the women that come to you and the way they feel like a man. Mm-hmm. And so order is what creates a man to be able to rise and provide and be emotionally present. That's order. That's, mm-hmm, the balancing we've been chatting about. Yet for myself, I fell into a trap. I was a personal trainer for 10 years. And when I left the training world, I went deep into spirituality, or what I thought spirituality was. And what I thought spirituality was me listening to Esther Hicks in the shower and Encinitas.
Oh, yeah.
And Law of Attraction and The Secret, so, and all these different things that really, they are a great starting place. So I'm not judging those things, totally, but they're a starting place because they have commoditized spirituality. They have purchased, mm-hmm, and packaged and resold spirituality for personal gain. And I'm not saying that's neither bad nor good. It's just, there's a starting place on everyone's path. And the starting place for me was actually just taking in a bunch of info that I thought spirituality was. And then really I was just using it as a way to further bypass my own development.
Yes.
And it wasn't honestly
by the way, I just want to say, I was like, wait, I'm just perpetually trying to fix myself. Oh, yeah.
I'm kneeling at the altar and I'm praying to the growth God, mm-hmm, so that I shall be saved. Yes. When really it's about establishing a relationship with my own young man inside. There's this little version of Josh, mm-hmm, that is really committed to spirituality because, mm-hmm, he just wants to have God experience God's self through him. Mm-hmm. And that might be kind of triggering for people that have a religious background. I don't think there's any right or wrong religion. I just think that anytime someone has to believe exactly what Jane or what Harry believes, mm-hmm, and if they don't believe what Jane or Harry believes, then they're wrong. Mm-hmm. That's not the right path. The right path is actually experiencing God through ourselves, through loving form. And loving form means being honest with oneself when one learns new information. And this is key. This is like a big piece here for everyone and for myself to get to. When I learn something that's new about spiritual growth or about myself, about knowing the self, I have to be honest and courageous enough to accept that newness as truth because my soul is telling me it's true. Not to be fully invested into the opportunity cost that might be lost because all the 15 years or the 5 years of other development are now incomplete. It's honoring that in the past. Like I honor Esther Hicks. I honor The Secret. These are great starting paths for all of us, but they're literally a step and a stage in our own maturation in the healing spiral or in the spiral of knowing the self or spirituality as a whole. And that's the part where people get really confused, myself included, because they actually have to surrender. When there's expansion, you feel good. you make love, you eat food, you go on vacation, right? When there's contraction, because all healing is a spiral. Every single time we go through any threshold in life, healing will always bring you back around to the thing that you thought you healed. And you'll be like, what the fuck? I thought I healed that piece. I thought I healed the mother wound, the father wound, the abandonment. Look how we started your pod. I'm like, yeah, I still have an abandonment wound I'm working through.
I know. I really want to ask you about that, but there's only so much time. So continue.
But the core of your question, I hope I'm guiding us right here. The core of your question was, and you dropped a bomb, you dropped like an atom bomb on me. What's your spiritual development looked like? And what have you learned about yourself? It's like, well, I learned that I was full of shit in the beginning. I learned that I'm a little bit less full of shit now. And I'm also committed to being as less full of shit. And really what I'm saying here is I'm committed to wholeness. I'm committed to understanding what wellness and what wisdom actually is. It's my life purpose. It's why I'm here on planet Earth. I'm trying to figure this shit out with you. Mm-hmm. What exactly is the meaning of all this? How can we live our life well? And how can I, Josh, choose to live my life well? What would a good man do in every moment? How can I be committed to being, to embodying that good man in me? And how can I give space and homage to the young man in me that is still wounded and still working on his light shining? How can I let young Josh come out to play? Without shaming him or blaming him? And how can I show up as a loving father and a powerful man and, you know, a sexual partner with Carrie Michelle? I mean, the demands on the masculine have never been this intense. This is the most intense it's ever been demanded of the masculine on planet Earth in our existence of our species. Women have their own demands too. I'm not negating that. There's unique demands for women right now. So that's the beginning of the conversation. There's a lot more there about, like, you know, this powerful bomb drop. What does your spiritual growth look like? It's been a re-reckoning and a recapitulation of how do I make myself embody wholeness as I move forward in my life with the unique challenges that God provides me? And how do I not sell my fucking self out in those moments and silence my inner being, my inner boy, and silence the direction and the guidance that's coming from my soul? There's practicality there, I promise. It may sound a little woo and a little high in the sky. The practical, real crunchy work is taking all the esoteric things I've said and making them fucking practical. What does a spiritual man committed to being good do in the morning? What does he do when we're in conflict with his woman? What does he do when his kids have kept him up for literally 3 months with no sleep? Like last night, I didn't get a lot of sleep, right? So spirituality is not this sexy thing that you like download from a PDF. So that's the beginning of our exploration into spirituality. That's an entire podcast. I'm happy to go wherever, but that's
I really appreciate you sharing. And honestly, what I hear, the golden thread of everything that you're speaking about, what will it take for a man to commit to a path that is truer and more noble and more balanced in partnership? And what I hear in all of your words is being a humble student. It's a commitment to being a humble student. And I think that is not nearly as sexy as anything. Like everything that I see out there in the personal growth world is way sexier than being a humble student. And what I have learned through my own work with my own husband, and also through, you know, hundreds, thousands of coaching sessions, is like when we can just commit to, maybe I haven't arrived, maybe I don't need to be right. Right. I mean, this idea of like, oh, this and this battle with the masculine and feminine of like, I have to be right. No, I have to be right. You know, making someone bad or wrong. When I really started to unpack that within myself and I start to see it in my session so much more, I feel so much more qualified to help someone unpack that in their own relationship, because we as a society have this addiction to making the other person bad or wrong. And in order to unhook from that pattern, that like ancestral pattern of relating in partnership, in politics, anywhere, we have to take a step back, take a deep breath, right? And be a humble student and just ask ourselves, like, what if I wasn't right? What if I don't know everything? What if I'm here to learn something? What could be here for my highest good? What could be here that I don't know? You know, and the ego, the mind loves to be like, no, I know everything. I can speak for myself. Like when I'm in an argument with my husband, it's like, no, I really know everything, right? And it's like, no, you don't. You don't fucking know everything. And also, I really appreciate you highlighting the pattern in partnership of a woman. And we're talking about men-woman partnerships here, obviously, of a woman negating everything that came before the last 5 minutes in an argument. And I want to talk about that if you're open, because something else that I suspect that is really relevant here is safety. I do a lot of work with the nervous system and somatics, and I work with a lot of trauma. And like the first rule of everything that I'm always looking for is like, where's the safety? We're not going to like, you know, dig out that big fear of abandonment unless you feel safe, because otherwise it's just going to leave this huge gaping wound. And so when I'm talking to a woman who is furious or frustrated or disillusioned, maybe, or like dissatisfied, maybe a little bit like over it with her man, a theme that comes up is like, oh, but you didn't feel safe in those 5 minutes or the 5 minutes before that or the 5 minutes before that. And so I do think there's this thing happening, and I love your insight here, of like men are showing, right? They're showing through their noble actions, like, here, I'm here, I'm creating safety, I love you, I'm showing up, right? But a woman is not feeling emotionally supported, heard, witnessed, safe. And so all of that evidence is stacked up. So then when the last 5 minutes happens, it's not really about the last 5 minutes. It's about 5 years of not feeling emotionally safe. What would you say about that?
Ooh, well, look, safety is, everybody's familiar with a map, right? Topography. So safety has a map as well. Mm-hmm. There are certain key terrain characteristics that have to be present for safety. First is breath, first and foremost. Mm-hmm. This is why there's 1,000+ students that are in my program that mm-hmm. all we do is train the nervous system to actually be fed by oxygen. A nervous mm-hmm. system without oxygen is a nervous system that is impossible of regulation. So I that's first that. And foremost. Then after that, there is presence, and that's training the PFC to have blood flow in it, right? So turning mm-hmm. down the volume of the default mode network, which is what breath does. It's also mm-hmm. what conscious meditation does, or focused energy and attention like you and I are having. I'm not worried about what's going on over there. Mm-hmm. There's nothing else with you and I in this moment. That is safety. Key yes. characteristics in the topography of safety, breath and presence, they're so simple, but they're so challenging. Mm-hmm. Because whatever trauma a man or a woman is bringing into that dynamic in the moment, mm-hmm. they are going to project their own lack of safety onto their partner. It's always about what can I do? What can I do? It's uh-huh. also about supporting your partner mm-hmm. in feeling safe within themselves. It's yeah. not just about me making Carrie Michelle safe. Yes, yeah. I can show up and be key ingredients in that topography. But if mm-hmm. she doesn't do the work to make herself safe, I will never fucking be safe enough for her, ever.
It's on me is that's literally the framework is like, we go first, like radical self-responsibility. Like if you are in a partnership and you're focusing everything outside of yourself, you have to first say like, okay, it's all me. What of my trauma is here? What of my projection is here? What of my, you know, conditioning? What's here in me? And then we go outward. So I'm really glad that you said that. And like presence, breath, one breath, two presence is.
Yes.
I love how simple it is.
There's a third.
I know.
Those are the first two. And okay. you have your own model. I have mine, right? All of these mm-hmm. models are bringing us to wholeness. It mm-hmm. doesn't matter what, all these models are beautiful. In my model, it's about the breath, the presence. It's also about the shared reality and the shared commitment to co-regulate. Mm-hmm. If there's not a shared reality and a shared mission to co-regulate each other, then you could practice the first two all day long. The real crunchy shit is going to come up in number three. But in that third part, this is the big one. And this is where everybody loves to practice the first two. Everybody loves to get a good breath work session in, you know, everybody loves to be like, okay, my phone is off and I'm present. But where the juice meets the squeeze is in that third realm. And that's where you have a shared commitment to co-regulate each other. That three-part framework, you could apply that to anything in our life. Can you imagine what would happen if in every skirmish or in every argument that you had with your husband or that I have with Carrie Michelle, that I could be fully committed to those three things and that I could actually check myself when I fall out of alignment with those three things? Oh my God, the pain curve would be so much less. Her nervous system and her ability to feel safe would be so much greater. Mm-hmm. But it's up to me to regulate myself. So my work first, her work first, shared co-regulation, then we can actually practice the two things that matter.
Amazing. Okay. This is so good. And I've never heard this third part. And I'm really curious how you created this ethos in your relationship, because shared reality and commitment to co-regulate, first of all, has to be a choice every single time. Is it just like a continued commitment through conscious conversation with your partner of like, hey, reminder, this morning, I know you didn't sleep, I didn't sleep, I'm kind of pissy, you're kind of pissy, but I just want to check in. We both have a commitment to co-regulate today. You know what I mean? Like, what is that show up? Like, because when you're in the moment and you're activated, you may forget.
You may forget. Of course you will.
Yeah.
Now, the worst thing I could ever do is in the moment when there's the deepest trigger, and I'm doing my best to like build my scaffolding. I'm trying to breathe the best I can. I'm doing my best to remind myself about all the things that I've learned up to this point. But sometimes these moments, and y'all ladies know exactly what I'm talking about, the somatics are screaming at you so hard and your catecholamines and your hormones are so yelling at you that it shuts down the part of the brain for rational thinking. It just shuts it down. And we go through that too as men, by the way.
Yeah.
And so women are like this very dominant oxytocin bond. And that's how they understand not only their relationship with self, but with other men are actually wired differently. We communicate more through vasopressin. And so there's just a chemical difference between us. And this is back to the beginning of the pod, right? Where I was like, we get to really honor and love these different parts of ourselves. That conversation is way different than I'm right, you're wrong.
Yeah.
It reminds me of this quote, and my intention with sharing this is not to be cool. I don't know a lot of Rumi's work. I heard this one quote and it hit me in the heart. Beyond right and wrong, there's a field. I'll meet you there. That's the field we want to play in. It's not pie in the sky. It's not dreamy. And if it is, I don't give a fuck, because I'd rather live my life as a dream and move in that direction. Mm-hmm. So like that field is really what's wanting to be, it's wanting to be vanquished in those moments of high trigger with husband and wife or partner to partner. Yeah. And so the more we can do our best to prepare ourselves, I actually, believe it or not, I printed out nonviolent communication and it's on our dining room table. It's right there.
So twin flames.
So when I'm like, I actually sometimes read the paper to her. I'm like, so babe, what I heard you say was, okay, great. What would it look like for me to support you in that? Like I actually go through it.
Beautiful.
And it may feel mechanistic in the beginning, but eventually it gets trained over time, just like any muscle. Relationships are a muscle. So the psyche is a muscle. In the same way that you go to the gym or do anything else, it takes fucking practice. But what keeps people from doing it is the unconscious and the previous wiring is screaming at us so loud to just tell the person they're fucked up, tell them that they're wrong, and feel that breath of self-righteousness in the moment.
Totally.
That reward of peace is what we're both wanting, the same thing, like you and your husband said. Yeah. We're both wanting that breath of, oh, okay, the threat has passed. I've proven them that they're wrong.
Yes.
But like that's not actually what's going to get us to the field. If we want to get to the field that Rumi talks about, imperfectly stumbling, honor each other along the way, the only way that I think we really get there is by practicing the tools. And when we forget to practice, we do our best to repair. And there's a really good way to repair. It's, wow, I'm really sorry for my ownership, whatever I did. And you could still be really fucking pissed at them for how they showed up, what they said, whatever. They brought up stuff from your family or they talked about your character as a man, whatever. Like all I can do is own my stuff. That's it. I can't demand an apology from her. I can't demand that she acts a certain way. And she can't do that of me either. That's co-regulation, right?
Yes.
Co-regulation is when you use a nonviolent framework where you take ownership from the I and you state the shared goal to the we, this is really what we're all working towards. But the challenge in this is unhooking and unweaving the tension in the nervous system and the stories inside the unconscious that make us show up in a way that we don't actually want to show up in that way. We don't want to show up hypervigilant. We don't want to show up judgmental and chastising. We actually don't want these things. Well, then why are we doing it? Why are we showing up in a way that we don't want to? It's because we're half beast and we're half spirit. I have to honor my biology and my neurology. I have to honor it.
Yes.
Sleep, hydration, all these key aspects. And if I don't, I'm fucked.
Yeah.
Try to co-regulate as a couple when you're on 3 hours of sleep. It ain't going to work that well, y'all. No. I'm just letting you know. Like,
those are hard times.
But if you and I want to play in the field with your husband and my future wife, like if we want to play there, we've got to be committed to earning that field, to like playing in that field, because we've earned it. We've really done the work to get there. Otherwise, we're just going to believe the story our unconscious tells us that it should be easier. I want to be like Joseph's and Emily's relationship. They have such an easy relationship. Mm-hmm. Anytime we start going into a comparison trap, you're fucked. You're literally going to create stories about why your partner isn't serving you.
Or what I see more is like, if my partner changed, if my partner did this, then I would be better. And this is like, there's so much like both and, you know, we're going to like leave room for nuance here. But it's like, I find that to be sometimes true. Because to be totally frank with you, it is rare in my life to meet a man who has this ownership and commitment to his own path, to his own self-responsibility, or, you know, being self-responsible for his trauma, his triggers, his beast, his spirit, all of it. And so I think that is a thing here that's dangling that probably I'm kind of guessing maybe like in my world, I see it way more than you do. And that's important. Like I really hear over and over and over from women in all walks of life, not just clients, just like women in general in the world, in my world are just talking and they're just like, it's not enough. What he's doing is not enough because it's not about the milk or the paycheck. There is no breath and no presence and no shared reality and no commitment to co-regulation, right? And that's not meant to be like a dig at all men. Like, I mean, my husband is my best friend and I feel like we have been sinking our teeth into this for a couple years or maybe 3 years now and far from a finished product. But I also think that there is a segment of men that I really hope can hear this and hear the invitation and the rally cry, you know, from somebody like you, not because you're so enlightened or, you know, farther down the path, but just to see a living, breathing, because I can't be that, right? Like I'm a woman, so I can't rally cry a man to have ownership for his life. Circling back, what I was saying is the both and, I think sometimes a woman feels like he's not showing up and it's not, and I'm not going to feel happy until he is doing the work or he is just has this commitment. And also there is that tendency that all of us have, which is like, if they would change, I could feel better. If they would respond this way, I could feel safe in my body. And that's like, I think where you were, what you were talking about, which has been so interesting for me to see how my own trauma comes up in arguments with my husband, where I'd be like, no. If he would blah, blah, blah. And then I'd be like, oh, this is from when I was a child and my parents said this thing. And like, I have this fear that I'm not being seen and heard and I'm misunderstood. And like, oh my God, it's all me. It's not him. It's all me. Right. And so just seeing, you know, the spiral, the swirly, confusing place that we live is not, it's not black and white. And I also think you've done a beautiful job of making it, like pulling the concrete. You're doing what you do and I'm doing what I do. And what would you say about what I shared for the men who feel either unwilling or unable to show up for that commitment?
Well, the way I can answer that is that, first of all, I don't know what it's like to be a woman, but I want to speak to every woman's heart right now. So please hear me. I ask for your permission for me to speak directly to your heart. I want to pierce all the way through the wounds, the conditioning, the stories, the hurt, the trauma, all the crunchy stuff. Let me just touch the softest part of your heart, if I may. What we need as men is we need to see and feel and be in union with that softness in your heart. When you close your heart to us for reasons that are valid, I get it. When you close your heart to us, it allows for the Grand Canyon to be created between us. What we need is men to show up for you. We need to be able to be in union and in dance and in feel the fabric of the softness of your heart in our fingertips. That's what we need. Because when we don't have that on an energetic level, we will not show up for you. It's so hard. It is the hardest thing to show up for you when we cannot touch the core rosebud essence of your heart. We just can't. Because what's the motivation for us? That we're just going to continue to get the castle wall? That we're going to continue to get the subtle and sometimes major rejection of that? And I get it. I get why you've closed in your heart. I fucking understand. Mm-hmm. Because you have been hurt, you have opened your heart, and you have given a man that softness, and he has trampled all over it. Mm-hmm. So I understand why you have closed it. But here's the reality. The more you choose to close it, the more you're going to receive what you don't want from us, which is our retreat. It is our lack of presence. It is our lack of breath. It is all the things you don't want, but it starts with you. And this is a shitty deal. I get it. And that's why I said, I don't know what it's like to be a woman. I don't know what it's like to be penetrated. I don't know what it's like to open up my physical body and my heart and be heartbroken in that way like a woman. I have no idea. I'm not going to sit here and fucking pretend. Mm-hmm. But I do know what it's like as a man to have a broken heart. I do know what it's like as a man to feel that no matter how hard I try, that I can never penetrate you. Mm-hmm. Because the wounds of the past are completely clouding the wisdom of what the moment wants. The wisdom of what the moment wants is chaos seeking order. And this is our shared work to do together. So that's first and foremost how I could address the men. So with that as a platform, then from that space where the man, because there's all this talk, right? There's a lot of talk about women feeling safe. And I get that. That's 100% valid. Mm-hmm. But we need to feel safe as men too. We're a fucking human being with feminine energy inside of us. Mm-hmm. And so that space in our hearts, this is why the whole red pill movement has been created. Mm. This is why Andrew Tate and David Goggins and all these like hyper vigilant masculine men are super powerful right now, is because there is such a deep wound in us as men where we have been closed off from a woman's heart. We have been used and abused. There's a call to healing for both sides. Neither men nor women have shared greater pain. Maybe women actually have, when you look at the darker side of the patriarchy, for sure, but especially in this world we're in now. So if we're going to be committed to showing up for you and promising you that we will do the very, very best to honor that part of your heart that has been so hurt before, that has been so trampled on before, it's the reason why you don't open up to us is because unconscious men have shit all over that part of you. Mm-hmm. Because they were wounded themselves and they were never taught by their mothers or their fathers how to actually honor a woman. Mm-hmm. That's the conversation that needs to be had. And then from that place of shared vulnerability, where she can come to him and say, I've been really hurt in the past. I'm super fearful to open up that part of you that I know the core of your masculine needs for it to feel safe. Mm-hmm. I know you need my full heart. I know you need to feel the softest part of me as a woman, so that you feel safe as a man, that I'm not gonna go fuck someone else, or that I'm not disinterested in the relationship, or that I'm not giving you the love and the respect and the fullness that you deserve in a relationship. I get that. And it's up to the man to co-regulate, right? To co-create. It's not just a spiritual word, co-creation and co-regulation. It's a real spell that we cast in each other. Like, I'm committed to co-regulating with you. And that means we have an altar of shared vulnerability. We both kneel at the altar of shared vulnerability. And at that altar, you open up to me and you say, here's what I'm afraid of. Here's what happens in my body. Speak from the eye, nonviolent communication. I feel this. I feel shut down. I feel scared. I feel this way. Great. Okay. Curiously, the man could respond, how can I talk to that part of you? And how can I make that part of you understand that I'm committed to loving that part of you, that I'm committed to understanding that part of you? And even if I don't understand that part of you, that I'm not going anywhere and that I got you and you're safe. Like, I can even feel the feminine in me relax when I talk like that. Mm-hmm. And then for her going the other way, how can I give him my full heart? No fucking holding back. How can I give him my sex, my energy, my time, my press, all the things that I'm demanding from him that I want? How can I give him the very thing that I'm demanding from him that he gives to me, when really what's going on most likely is that he's truly doing the best he can to meet the demands of the modern feminine. She's operating from a space of closing her heart, and rightly so, because she's been hurt in the past. And so really what we need is to put down the shields, put down the swords, come to the altar of shared vulnerability and say, here are my wounds. Can you please honor my wounds? Here are my wounds. Can you please honor my wounds? Now that we have this honoring of our wounds, can we do the work to co-regulate and to move forward together? Because we do both want the same thing. We really do. And can we honor each other in this process as we move forward, that we know it'll be crunchy, we know we'll fight again, we know things will get hard, but can we at least, can we just have this third portion of a commitment to co-regulation and an honoring at this altar of vulnerability and humility that the man and the woman don't have it figured out? They don't. So I think really what this is, it's a call to put down the arms. To drop the shield, to drop the weapons, for women to practice being in their full heart and articulating what safety and their full heart to their man actually is, not from shame and blame. And this is the key.
Not from shame and blame.
If she opens her heart and it feels like he tramples on it or it feels like he doesn't respect it, she can choose to close it. But I'm going to tell you the results you're going to get when you snap close your heart like a Venus flytrap. And when you start pointing at your man, all it's going to do is drive him away from you. Now, for the man, he has to be awakened and he has to notice and be attuned to when a woman's heart is closing. And he has to have the language to tune in and say, hey, babe, I'm feeling in our space that there's a bit of a disconnect. What can I do to bring us closer together? You see how that's about I'm feeling and we? If I told her, hey, I'm noticing that your heart is closed. What's up? The fuck's that going to do? That's not going to do anything, right? That's actually going to make her close her heart more.
Yeah.
So this is a nuanced process that we're all working through. And I'm working through it too. But like, I almost cried there when I was telling you that, because it's so fucking beautiful. It's so fucking beautiful. This shared reality of co-creation and co-regulation with the breath and the presence. Like, it's not easy, but it's so important for all of us to really, this is the most important thing we can do. Yeah. My son and my daughter are watching every move that we make.
Yeah.
And it's being baked into their deep, deep cortex and their amygdala. We have 7 years before the hemispheres start really connecting. We have 25 to 28 years before the PFC and the structures are completely baked. So this is our responsibility as parents, you and I, and for all the dads and moms listening. Like, if you don't want to do it for you, or if you're having issues of self-love, like, yes, work with a coach on self-love and do the inner work, but do it for your fucking children. Yeah. Do it for your children, not out of shame or blame, but because you love them so much. You and I are the one. We're the one. We're not better. We're not cool. It's actually a really hard path. It's not even sexy. When you're the one, it sucks. Look at Neo in the Matrix. He was the one. Look at all the pain and torment he had to go through before he put his hand up and just said, no, I won't fucking do this anymore. I will not project my father and my mother onto you anymore. This is not a game I'm interested in playing. And I know you aren't either. This is the call to arms. So if this is resonating with you, stand the fuck up and claim ownership of these models of being and own them and make this your life's work. Because if we don't do this, what's going to happen is all the models of control and narrative out there, social media, technocrats, they're going to take over. It doesn't come from fighting. Revolution doesn't come from war. Revolution comes from interchange. So thank you for letting me share that, because damn, it's important. It's so important that we all get that this is a two-way street, and that men and women, there actually is no such thing as the war of the sexes. It doesn't fucking exist.
Yeah.
It's just that our unconscious and our egoic mind loves to make it exist so that it can feel validated and right and safe. But I'm going to tell you, there's a different place where you can feel safe from that has no finger pointing and no making the other person wrong. That's true safety. Pseudo safety is when you make the other person wrong and you believe the egoic mind narrative. That's not real safety. That's temporary safety. And then when that goes away, then people go to porn or sex or shopping or overworking and other ways to fill the hole of the hungry ghost. So,
oh my gosh.
That's it.
I really want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for that answer. It was so beautiful. And like my heart, when you were saying it, like the beginning, the whatever, where we started, like touching the innermost part of you, I was reminded of a couple incidents where I literally had the consciousness where I was like, I know what you want from me, like to my husband. And then I'll say it. I'm like, I know what you need. I don't want to give it to you. I don't want to give it to you because my walls are up. And I'm just sharing that to be really transparent about how this thing shows up you know, at least in a woman, and how it is. And I mean, Kelly Brogan talks about this a lot. It's like, I know this is my superpower. I know this is my edge. Like, I know I have these cash and prizes inside, you know, and it's like, I have had to, you know, and women have over millennia had to adapt to figure out how to use this thing that we have inside to survive, to not be killed, whatever. Sure. And so it is so interesting when I just look at it from almost like a biological standpoint, like what is happening? Like, oh, this is this like unconscious need to protect this soft part of me. And I also know that that's what he wants, but I want to win. And I just think this idea, as you were sharing, of like, we both have to be vulnerable. We both have to commit. It can be so challenging. I want to say to go first, and I will say, having worked through these crunchy bits so much with my partner in the last 3 years, where we were like working with a coach and having these conversations where I was held by the coach to this moment at my edge of like, I am not safe. I am not comfortable. I do not want to keep doing this. But because of the coach, that commitment was there where it was like, we are committed to getting through this birth canal. Like, we are going to do it. And on the other side, the level of connection that I have felt and experienced with my partner, I honestly feel sad that most partners aren't experiencing this, because we're so scared of being wrong, of losing, of going first, of sharing our little treasured boxes that we have to, you know, withhold from each other. And it does really align with the mission of my work, which is like, okay, I go for it. It's all me. Okay. What does it look like when I just commit myself to that and trust that I will know when there's way more harm being done than just, you know, always assuming positive intent, which is another interesting thing that happens. It's like, we choose these people to have, you know, soul unions with, or like, I'm going to have children with you or whatever. But then as soon as our trauma is triggered, we assume the worst intent. And I think there's such a gray area in between where it's like, yeah, there's a lot of women I work with end up getting divorced because it's not happening. There is no field. There is no co-commitment. One person is unwilling. And I can say in this example, the man is unwilling because the woman is coming to me every week. We're like, I am never going like, you're right. Like, yes, he's the bad guy. Like, that's not the point of my work. Sure. It's like, okay, how am I unconsciously perpetuating this pattern?
See, the reason is, and I'll speak to the ladies, the reason why you have so many women coming to you that are complaining that their man doesn't want to step up is because, and this doesn't excuse his behavior, by the way, it's because, forgive him, he simply does not even know that he does not even know. He needs you to teach him, but he needs you to teach him from that soft center place that he needs to feel you and hear you from. If you try to teach him that this is important from a place of shame and blame, or you're not enough, you're closing the opportunity gap before it even begins. And so the call is to put down the arms, but also the call is for the divine feminine to actually be divine. Yeah. Right. And I'm gonna put some ladies on blast, and then I'll put men on blast right afterwards.
That's fair.
So we're even. Okay. Cause one is neither right or wrong. They're both, this is the wounded aspect of both.
Right. Which I'm so curious about looking at both. I'm like, how are we unconsciously perpetuating, and what's happening for you? And like, how do we bridge the gap? So blast us. Let's go.
We bridge the gap by taking radical ownership. And I say the word radical, it doesn't have to be radical. It can just be peaceful ownership too. Just ownership, right?
Yeah.
It can be ownership of the fact that I come into a union and relationship with wounds. Boom. Mm-hmm. All stop. Mm-hmm. Woman comes into a relationship with wounds. Boom. All stop. Cool. Let's start there. That's how you can speak to your men, by the way, ladies. That's it. Speak to us in times like we're robots, because we have a different functioning of the brain than you do. You are, women are literally wired for multitasking. I remember I was interviewing Alison Armstrong, and she said, well, women can have like 15 drawers open at once, then they'll know exactly what's in every drawer. And then as she's going through the drawer, she'll realize that the dishes in the sink are triggering her and making her feel unsafe. And men, we come into the house and we're just like, wow, the couch looks great. I'm going to go sit on the couch. Like, it's so fucking different. It's so different with us, right? So, so in our healing, women and men have to respect that about each other. Now, there has to be a love, right? Because without love, that none of this is possible. If you don't actually love someone, then at some point, one person will just give up. And there's no shame in that either, right? Like the ladies that come to you and get divorced, if you're trying with your whole heart, I would say that probably half of those could be saved if they integrated the wisdom that you're sharing with them and the wisdom I'm sharing right now, which is there's a certain way to communicate to your man that will yield beautiful fruit. Because you're going to get to a result either way, right? You're going to communicate to your man that it's both time for us to rise. It's you to take ownership as men. This is the core complaint you talked about where men don't take ownership. So if that's the key complaint, he doesn't take ownership. How can you as a woman be his teacher? Not from a place of better than, but what kind of language can you use as a woman to teach him that you love him by him feeling that space in your heart that is literally the most intoxicating fruit? So I think what practically what it might look like for all the ladies is like, you know, if you're really feeling super pissed or triggered or unfulfilled or undernourished by your man, I think what you can do is just have an honest conversation with him from the eye. Give him warning. Be like, hey, babe, there's something I've been feeling and thinking about. There's nothing for you to stress about right now. There's nothing for you to fix or do. But tomorrow afternoon, like, you know, at 4 p.m., can we just have a heart to heart? There's just something I've been processing and I would love to get your advice on it. I would love to get your take on it. Like, you're giving him warning. You're telling him there's nothing for him to do. Because immediately where we go is like, well, what do I need to fix? You know, like give him warning, but also tell him there's nothing for him to do. You know, it's just so set up the space properly. Then when he gets to the space, use that nonviolent framework and yes, go through imago, go through whatever dialogue you want to do, but let him know that like you love him so much and your intention with this conversation is to give him access to your full heart, to give him access to your full being, to give him access to all of you, which is exactly what he craves. You actually want to give that to him. But in order for you to give, you know, babe, in order for me to give you my full heart and in order for me to like show up for you as a woman in the way that I think would be the most juicy, sexual, fun, powerful dynamic with us in a relationship, there's just some things that I need from you. Is that okay? Can we talk about? Of course he's giving, yeah, babe, what's up? Oh, you want to give me sex and presents and fun and yeah, cool. What are you?
You're cashing prizes? Sweet.
Like, what do you need from me? You know? Yeah. And then, but you see how the difference is? Like the hardest part for men and women, and I'll speak to the woman, the hardest part for you as women, because you have been trampled on and because your heart has been trampled shut and because you're protecting yourself, is to speak with an openness in your heart about the end result that you desire. That's the hardest part, because the language you use is going to come from that place. If you're using language that comes from a castle wall, he's not going to be inspired to go there. He's actually going to feel a threat and he's going to be uninspired to go to that place with you. If you speak to him from a place of an open heart and he's receptive and he's conscious to it, he will attune and know that it's like a really beautiful time for you guys to deepen your connection, but he has to do enough work to get there on his own. So my heart goes out to that woman that comes to you that says, wow, I'm showing up with you every week. It's been months. He's still not receptive to it. It's a language play. And if he's still not receptive after the language play, then there's just, there's that third part is missing. There's not a shared reality. There's not a shared
reality. Yeah. That's so key. And what I hear is you saying like the woman has to do the work to feel safe within herself first, right? Because if you don't feel safe within yourself, you could never have a conversation with anyone, but especially with somebody to be like, hey, from this place of desire and enticing and magnetism, I want to share the innermost parts of me. But babe, the door's closed, but here's why. But like, I'm not doing this from like a trauma response. I'm just like, I feel safe in my own body. I feel like that sexy sense of like, I am so powerful and okay in this experience right now, not when the fucking house is clean and the all the stuff, right? All the excuses that we use that we've been taught to use. And then to have that conversation. So I do think that is why so much is of like my work is like reminding women, like you go first, like how do you create safety within yourself?
I love that. You go first. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he's either going to be on board or not.
And also, I think it's worth mentioning that not half of the women I come to get divorced, because that's going to really scare away any potential clients. It's been like two in 2 years out of many. But I do think I had a client say to me once, she was really frustrated because they had already like been to couples counseling and she's like, I'm doing all this work to save my marriage and he's not doing anything. And I was like, just so that you know, like, I don't think that the work we're doing here is for you to save your marriage, because that requires two people committing. Like, I can't help you save your marriage on your own. That's a two-person co-commitment. However, the work that we're doing is to allow you to feel so safe and clear in your knowing and in your body and in your trauma and in your triggers, so that you are sure if you know so much harm has been caused and he's not willing to co-regulate, that you're sure. Because you would never want to be like, I'm getting a divorce. Actually, no, I'm not sure. Actually, did I make a mistake? Right? You want to come to that decision feeling so clear in your own energy and experience to know either way. Because of course, it would be a huge, huge decision. And right?
Yeah. Gosh, this space really gets to be a space that gets shared. This has to be shared. It really does. I'm going to put an ultimatum on this. Please share this podcast with somebody that is struggling with these concepts. Fucking share this, because there's so much shared wisdom. Like, everything here has been about turning the mirror on me, turning the mirror on you, turning the mirror on us, not blaming the other person. That's the path of the divine, right? Mm-hmm. Look at all the teachers that have been both ancient and contemporary. They're all saying the same thing with different words. Yes. And that is, what is the middle way here? What is the middle way? Look at the Tao, right? One of the most beautiful things, again, I'll preface this. I am not a Tao expert. I am not deeply studied.
But yeah.
My brother bought me a copy of the book a long time ago, and I flipped through it at times. And one of the phrases that sticks to my soul, the great Tao loves and nourishes all things, but it does not lord it over them. So if God energy through the Tao loves and nourishes all things, it does not point the finger and say, I'm doing the work, but you're not.
Yes.
That's not the Tao. That's not God. That's not the middle way. The middle way is, I'm going to do my work. I love how you said, I'm going to go first. That's so good. What happens when I go first and then I check in and see if the other person is actually in alignment with where we're going, right? That's like, yeah, I saw how my dad and my mom were. I saw how my grandparents were. I know how the lineage has played out in our life. And I'm just interested in a different fucking game.
Yeah.
I'm interested in a different game. I don't want that. It's not a blame or shame on them. I love you, grandparents. I love you, lineage. I got you. You did not know that you did not know. We are committed to creating a different game because we say so and because we are chosen. We're chosen to do something special here. And something special doesn't mean it's going to be easy. It means it's actually going to be really fucking hard. Otherwise, you wouldn't have the awareness of listening to this podcast right now.
I think the hardest thing about all of this is that when we, and we, by me, I mean like the women in my world, when they start to feel all of these feelings, when they start to feel incoherence in a relationship, when all of their trauma starts to come up, and when all of the lineage, you know, the ancestral trauma is present and you're fighting and it's like so uncomfortable.
Yep.
And the best way out is through. It's like one of my favorite quotes. We have been brainwashed to distrust that place right there, where it gets so uncomfortable, where we know nothing, where it's like upside down world. And it's like, is this my mom or my dad? Or is this me? Is this true? Am I the bad guy? Am I the villain? Is he the villain? Right? The whole thing. And I just want to voice that for anybody listening, because there is going to be a moment. And this has happened for me, not just in partnership. I keep thinking about, like, my listeners are very familiar with this health diagnosis, this ongoing health diagnosis I've had with my daughter since the summer. And where there's this moment where it's like everything you thought you knew, everything that you thought you needed to be okay is going to just be ripped apart. And it's just going to be so intense and so much emotion. And when your trauma comes up, it can be, like you keep pointing out, it can be so painful. And I just want to invite you listening. What if that wasn't a sign you were going the wrong way? Like, what if that is an indication that you're going the right way? What if that is the fucking path? And it is the one thing that we have been unwilling to do as a society for so long, because emotions make us weak and we can't lose control. And that is what I find. It's like so many women in that like controlling masculine energy that they have taken on as part of their conditioning, as part of who they think they need to be as mothers and whatever. And really, when I have just let it all go and just felt that like combination of total confusion and overwhelm and despair and grief and like, I don't know. Actually, I don't know anything. I don't know if it's going to be okay. I don't know if we're going to make it. I don't know if my daughter's going to be like all of it. Like, I don't know. And just let myself be in that pit of like, you know, the death. That is the moment where you have the opportunity to be reborn. That is the moment where you can get through it to the other side, to the fucking field that you were referencing, right? Yeah. And that is the moment that I find that we as a collective are so scared of. We're so uncomfortable with it and we don't trust it. And I think so much of the work I seek to do is to just give women and men endless permission and reminders, like, you have been brainwashed to distrust this experience. And it is the most important, natural, like organic experience part of being a human. And so if you feel that, like, obviously find support, make sure you're working with, you know, coaches, mentors, therapists, like people that can hold you through it, but go through it. Like, mm-hmm. You've been repressing it for so long. You've been distrusting it. You've been making your feelings and the tension and the contrast bad and wrong for so long. Why not just try something new and leaning into it? You know, when you think about birth, it's like, I don't know about Carrie Michelle's birth experiences, but I've had three very different natural births. And there is this moment right before that baby comes out where you are just like, there is no fucking way. That body is coming out of this body. I don't want to do this. It hurts so bad. I want to fall. I was falling asleep in between contractions with my first child because I had been in labor for so long. And then the baby comes out. The baby fucking comes out. Like, the one thing we know is that baby is coming out, right? And then as soon as the baby comes out, you're like, I felt nothing. I was like, okay. And it was fine. And it was over. And it just was like, no pain. I mean, there's residual, you know, it's a different thing. But that experience, you move through it and then you have a, God willing, you have a beautiful baby, right? And I just think, you know, this theme of death and rebirth is so potent in my work. And it's, I'm finding as you're speaking about this dynamic between men and women and fighting and disagreeing and projecting and perpetuating these ancestral cycles, I'm realizing one of the reasons we haven't been able to give our men access to that fruit, to that softest part of our heart, is because when we start to get into that territory of like, I'm not safe, this doesn't feel good, I actually hate you, there's so many emotions, we just retreat, you know, we get the epidural and then the labor slows down and then the fight kind of goes back to nothing. You know, it's like you'd never resolve it. And if you can just stick with it and in a supportive, trauma-informed way that prioritizes your safety as a couple and that commitment, if you keep working through it, what might just be possible on the other side is, as you kept saying, that vulnerability. You know, that vulnerability meets this co-creative expansion into a totally new dimension of partnership that you don't know exists because you have been conditioned to distrust the thing that comes before it.
Wow. The visual of birth and seeing both births. My son's birth was unfortunately a cesarean. We tried a home birth. It didn't work out. And then the second birth was at 9,000 feet in Colorado with my daughter being born in like a water pool with two of these midwives that were so amazing.
Hell yeah.
And I saw both extremes. And I know for certain that every woman experiences whatever birth story for however many for children she is supposed to experience that will actually bring the chaos in her to order so that she becomes the woman and the mother that her ancestors could not if she chooses to. These birth experiences happen for a divine reason, a divine purpose, and they're not easy. Like you said, you're like, how is this body going to come out of my other body? And even when I was there, I was like, how the fuck is that body going to come out of the body? Like, how is that even real? Like, is this birth thing real? And then when I saw my daughter's head pop out, I was like, oh my God, this is real. Like, and it goes back to something you said, the suppressed memories or the repressed memories that a lot of times are being fought. It's almost like a beach ball is being held underwater. Either consciously, which is like suppression, but really the deeper shit is repression, which is the unconscious holding of the beach ball. I would be suffice to say that repression is actually 20 times harder to locate and to heal 100%. Than suppression. Because when I repress something, it's like, I don't even know I'm holding the ball.
You gotta do that shit like somatically.
I'm tired all the time and I'm exhausted. Yeah. It's like, why am I so exhausted? I've already done breath work and somatic experiencing. I've been working with my coach for a year and it's all the conscious shit. You've been working on all the conscious shit. The unconscious stuff only comes out, like you said, through death and birth. I just had a friend to honor his life. I'll say this, like January 5th of 2024, my friend Christian was tragically killed in a plane crash, and his two daughters, Christian Oliver, and it just sent a shockwave into my being. I can like still feel it now. I did a deep vision quest with him. We bonded over 10 days and 4 days of fasting. And one of the things he shared with me was just like, we shared this together. We so wanted to just be in union and harmony and understand the feminine. That was our shared core wound with Christian and I. Mm-hmm. And the majority of the vision quest was about healing our relationship to the feminine mm-hmm. in us and to the feminine in our women. Mm-hmm. And when he died, one of the things that broke my heart so much is I was like, God, he never got to understand. Like he never got to feel what like touching the softest part of the feminine was in total bliss and God energy form. Like, fuck. But then his girlfriend of 3 years got on a group call that we were doing and honoring him. And she said, you know, a few days before he died, he looked at me and he said, wow, I finally understand what it is that unconditional love is. Mm. And like, it makes me just want to cry right now because I'm like, man, how fleeting that is. Like how much power a woman has to be able to have a man touch that fruit and touch that part of herself that truly is God. Like mm-hmm. women hold God inside of themselves. We hold God inside of ourselves by mm-hmm. providing that conscious safety in ourselves and then to our women. Mm. That's what true providership is. You can't mm-hmm. just provide from a place of force. You have to provide from a place of safety and peace. It doesn't fucking work the other way. I tried it the other way. You just mm-hmm. get sick and exhausted. Mm-hmm. So anyways, I'm sharing that because you talked about birth and I'm like, wow, like how can I look at all these deaths and rebirths in my life mm-hmm. as unconscious or conscious permission slips for this suppressed and repressed memories to come out, right? Mm. Because they're fucking there anyways. So we may as well just surrender it to look at them and to be honest about our healing path together as man and woman in sacred union. That's the kind of fucking game I want to play. That's the game I want to play where there's this altar and like, what you got? Oh, I got this and this and this. What do you got? Oh, mm-hmm. well, I got this and this and this. Mm-hmm. It can be that simple.
That would be a fun game.
This hiding of the suitcases, it doesn't work, y'all.
No.
Open up your fucking suitcases together, mm-hmm. unpack the shit, hold mm-hmm. each other through it, and know that sometimes the roller coaster is going to be bumpy as fuck.
So that's okay. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Oh my gosh. This was such a beautiful conversation. I really can't thank you enough for bringing your whole heart and your lived experience and your vulnerability to it. I don't think it could have worked. It definitely could not have worked any other way. Yeah. But how can people, you know, support your work in the world, listen to the podcast, check out your offerings, let us know.
So if you've been struggling with one of the practices we talked about, which is breathing, it's something that transcended my whole life, then that's the best place to start is you go to breathwork.io and we were talking and I want to give you a special gift. It's 20% off the program, which by the way, the program's already super discounted. I made it very affordable because mm-hmm. it's less than you going out to eat. And because this is the biggest and most brightest meal you could ever eat is your own breath and your own co-regulation of your nervous system. So the code is ME20 in honor of your podcast. So ME20 and it's 20% off and that's at breathwork.io. That's the best place to start. Now, if money is tight for you right now, which by the way, that is cheaper than a meal. So it should be totally cool for you. But if literally you don't have like a few dollars to spend on yourself, which if you're here on the podcast, I'm sure you do anyways, because we're invested in our health, spiritual mm-hmm. and emotional mental health, then yes, you can go to the podcast. It's always going to be free. We're going to be doing an epic episode that'll come out and that's at joshtrent.com/podcast or just go on Instagram at Josh Trent Official or at Wellness and Wisdom on Instagram. There's all kinds of places to start the journey and there's commingling between our audiences, right? Mm-hmm. And really, what does it mean to be an audience? I want to honor an audience. An audience is the one that actually gives the most. They give their time to the person that's leading, to the person that's creating, to the person that's making the space like you have done today, so worthy of sharing. Like you've made this such a worthy place of sharing and you've mm-hmm. done it because you've allowed me access. Not the kind of access that your husband gets, but the kind of appropriate mm-hmm. access that a friend who's a man would get, right? You've given me mm-hmm. access to that part of your heart that created mm-hmm. so much safety for me to share in a way that I really could be my whole fucking self. And then I just came into the space and let it rip. You know, like that's the kind of dynamic that this is a friendship dynamic, but mm-hmm. in an intimate dynamic, mm-hmm. that's the part that your husband or me with Carrie Michelle, that's the part that's so nourishing and healing on a fucking cellular epigenetic lineage level. Mm-hmm. This is the gift that you've brought to me in friendship today, but this is the gift that men and women get to give each other in mm-hmm. intimate relationship. This space of like, wow, I can really just be myself and I'm not going to be judged and I'm going to be felt and seen and heard. It starts with breath. It starts with presence. It starts with a shared reality of co-regulation and a story mm-hmm. that we're both writing together. So but it doesn't start anywhere else. It starts with you and me right here. And 100%. The audience that's giving us their precious, most precious gift, and that is their time. They're actually the most valuable part of this, because without an audience, this wouldn't exist, right? There'd be nothing Absolutely. To see without them. Absolutely. So thank y'all for being here.